We are in Ephesians 5, but turn a page back as we're going to look at the last couple of verses of chapter 4 and get a running start, because it's been a couple weeks. By the way, Bud has Bibles, and Bud will do communion the same way this service that we did last service. Ephesians 5, it's been a couple weeks since we've been in Ephesians. Pastor James was in the pulpit last week. The brethren at Calvary Chapel of the Ozarks send their love, by the way. But last week, Pastor James was talking about mercy. The week before that was Easter, and on Resurrection Sunday, appropriately enough, we talked about the resurrection. And before that, we were finishing up chapter 4. Paul exhorting us, as he so often does, about putting off and putting on. Verse 31, let's remind ourselves. Paul said, "Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you. And while you're at it, get rid of malice." Put that off. And instead, put this on. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you. And it's been interesting in a way, and completely unintentionally, how the last couple weeks have really been an amplification of those two verses, an elaboration of that passage. Good Friday and Resurrection Sunday, we rejoiced, right? We celebrated that God put aside His anger, His wrath toward us, and it allowed it to fall on Jesus instead. Jesus, who stood in our place and asked to be punished for our crimes. Jesus asked that the Father's justice be poured out on Him so that we could experience the fullness of what? God's kindness and tenderheartedness, so that we could receive His forgiveness. And that flowed right into last week with James reminding us we have received mercy, we who have asked for it. We who have come to God on the basis of the cross and said, "Yes, God, I'm willing to receive it. Oh, how I want to receive it." And having received mercy, Pastor James pointed out what Paul points out in verse 32, having received mercy, we should be the most merciful of all people, shouldn't we? Having mercy on one another, forgiving one another, how? Even as Christ forgave us. Being patient, gracious, kind, to one another, even as God is all of that and more toward us. That's where we left off, and that's where Paul is going to pick up this morning. The chapter break here is bizarre to me because there's no interruption. There's not even a segue. Paul is just flowing from the end of chapter 4 right into this next thought. Therefore, because of that, in light of that, be imitators of God as dear children. Take after your father, Paul is saying. Pattern your life after him. Imitate him. Let God be your example and your guide, which means, verse 2, that we're to walk in love, as Christ also has loved us and given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma. Incense, as it were. Worship. We are loved, Paul says to begin chapter 5. We were loved, we are loved, we will forever be loved. And as we are loved, so shall we love. As God in Christ loved us and loves us and eternally forever will love us, so we are to love others. And that's everything we've been talking about, right? If it's coming back to you after a couple weeks away. For all of the reasons that Paul's been laying out, we're to respond to the love that we've received with the love that we give. Because love is worship. Incense, an aroma offered to God, verse 2, in adoration of a God who is love. We love in adoration of a God who is love, a God who, because of His love, sent His Son to die for us. Love is worship. The other thing that Paul has been telling us, love is witness. Love is adoration, but it's also declaration, isn't it? Walk in love, Paul says, verse 2, so people can see your love and wonder about your love and ask about your love and discover the source of your love. Where does your love come from? Oh, how exciting it is when we get that question, but we won't if we're not giving people anything to wonder about. If they don't see the love of God pouring out of us. As we cross over to chapter 5, Paul's continuing a theme here. And it wasn't just at the end of chapter 4 that he introduced this. It was way at the beginning of chapter 4. The beginning of chapter 4, verse 1, Paul told us, walk worthy of your calling. Live in a way that reflects such a great salvation. Live in a way that declares the power of the cross and reveals the product of the cross to the world. What's the product of the cross? For that matter, what's the power of the cross? Same answer to both questions. Love. Walk worthy of your calling, Paul said, chapter 4. Walk in worship of a God who came after you when you were a sinner. Walk in witness of a God who died to save you when you were his enemy. Walk in love. That's the big idea this morning. Paul's going to have a lot more to say on the subject, obviously. Two chapters to go. But this is where we're going to pause this morning, because I think this is what the Lord would have us consider this morning. What Paul just said. I think the Lord would have us ponder what Paul just said. Walk in love. What is that all about? Walk in three words. Three syllables, actually. Walk in love. Such a simple phrase. But we know that small and simple have nothing to do with power and might. Things that are infinitely small can also be immensely powerful. What happens when we take the smallest atom of the universe apart? Hydrogen atom, one proton, one electron. What happens when we pry those apart? How much energy is released, right? What kind of power is available? What magnitude of power is unleashed when we obey that simple instruction, walk in love? And to answer that question, to fully answer it, not just wave at it, not just give it the dude nod as we walk by. To understand the implications of the phrase, walk in love, we got to unpack what Paul means, what God intends when he talks about walking in love. That's how I believe God would have us spend our time this morning. Let's talk about love. And for some of you, that just kicked off a whole soundtrack in your brain, because Amy is sitting there just all Celine Dion. Let's talk about love. Let's talk about us. Let's talk about life. Let's talk about trust. Oh, so beautiful. I joke, but I don't, because that's the problem having this conversation. Culture gets in the way. It's impossible to talk about love for more than 60 seconds and not stumble into a song title or a movie soundtrack. A couple minutes ago, I almost said Power of Love. And then you'd be all Back to the Future. Marty, it's your parents! A couple minutes before that, I almost asked, what is love? And then it would be Night at the Roxbury. Baby, don't hurt me. And now you've got that in your head. You can thank me later. But that's just what it is. I'm either going to be dropping sound lyrics or song lyrics and distracting you, or I'm going to be trying really hard not to and distracting myself. I pick me. I'm going to talk about love and you snicker when you need to snicker. But see, that's part of the problem. The way that we think about love and talk about love is so commercialized and commoditized and trivialized in our culture that when we come across a phrase like walk in love, we do wave at it, we do nod at it, we do brush by it, because it's easy to. We're surrounded by people talking about love, and so we don't stop and ponder the significance of what Paul really means or the magnitude of what Jesus actually did. or the enormity of what God is calling us to do? What does it mean to walk in love? I've been asking myself that question all week, and I've come to the conclusion, and it's not a surprising conclusion, it's sort of obvious actually. A lot of times, walking in love means something different to us than it means to God. Shocking, I know. But I did a little bit of an experiment. I tried to pay attention this week to all of the times I said I love you to someone. And I tried to circle back and ask myself, so what did you mean when you said that? I went back and tried to dissect what that word love meant to me in those moments as I used it. And I gotta say, it was a sobering exercise. I discovered, for example, a lot of times I use the word love to mean thank you. You brought me a Coke Zero, I love you! Now, thanking people is good. Being grateful is part of the kindness and the tender-heartedness that Paul talks about at the end of chapter 4. And he actually talks about that in a lot of places, in a lot of letters. He talks about kindness, and he talks about expressing gratitude. Paul expresses gratitude a lot, which might seem obvious, but I spent time with a pastor once upon a time who does not believe in saying thank you. At least when I knew him, and at least not to believers. He'd probably say thank you to someone who brought him an iced tea at a restaurant, but within the church, he would say, if you're doing it as unto the Lord, you shouldn't need thanks for me. If it's something that he called you to do, then he'll be the one to say, well done, good and faithful servant, and my thanks should be irrelevant. Yeah, I don't buy that. Because if God is our example always in all things, and God says, well done, good and faithful servant, I think we can express appreciation to one another. I think we can be grateful to each other. I don't think anyone's going to be stumbled if we let them know, hey, you made a difference. I mean, that's just basic human kindness, right? If we withhold that, it's going to be conspicuous by its absence. But all of that said, love is not the same as kindness. Love is not the same as saying thank you. If you think about it, saying thank you in response to something that someone did for me, something nice that they did, saying I love you in response to that is a little disturbing. Because am I not just saying I love you because of what you did? Does that imply that if you don't bring me an ice cold beverage, then I don't love you? One person in this room brought me a Coke Zero last week. I love them. The rest of you, not so much. Better luck next week. You didn't bring me anything, so I don't need to love you. Which is not what I meant, obviously. But it's sort of what I said. I love you for what you did for me, for what you do for me. That's not imitating God. That's not walking in love. What had we done for God exactly when Jesus loved us on the cross? Other than rebel against him, obviously. I said I tried to pay attention this week to the times that I talked about loving people, and I tried to ask myself, what did I mean just now when I said that? That was the first one I noticed. Love is more than appreciating people who do things for me. I've got, I think, 5 more. Half a dozen seem like a good number because by definition it's an incomplete list, so 6 is a good number. Walking in love is more than appreciating people who help me. That's number 1. Walking in love is more than supporting people who agree with me. Second time I caught myself talking about love, I was being excited about someone that I discovered was like-minded about a particular issue. Like, you said what I wanted to say, but you said it first, and you said it so well, and you said it better, and you said what I wanted to say, but you said it better than I would have, and I'm so glad that you said it, and I love you, you rock. Okay, I was excited. And it's okay to be excited. And it's okay to love people that we discover unity with, especially about stuff that's actually important, and not about bad 80s music. But what about the people we disagree with? Touchstone of liberty in our country used to be the idea, I completely disagree with what you're saying, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. That idea has sort of fallen by the wayside, hasn't it? It's been replaced by, I completely disagree with what you're saying, and if you try again, I'm going to get you canceled. And by the way, I'm going to hate you quite a lot in the meantime. What happened there? What happened is we got away from the Bible. What happened is we got away from the idea that every person is created in God's image and precious in His eyes. Whether they think like us and believe like us and live like us or not. I think a lot about the C.S. Lewis quote from a couple months ago. You've never met a mere mortal. I'm paraphrasing. But none of us has ever met a mere mortal. Every person you've ever met is a soul that will spend eternity either in the presence of God or removed from His presence. Everyone you've ever met is a soul that Jesus died for. Where would we be if God's love only extended to the people that God agreed with? If Jesus' death was only effectual for the people that God looked at and said, oh, I love him. He thinks just like me. Right and wrong, good and bad. Oh, I love him. How many of us would occupy heaven? The number that you're looking for is zero. Because it was while we were his enemies. Romans 5:10. While we were his enemies, Christ died for us. When we agreed with him about nothing, Jesus loved us on the cross. So walking in love is not just loving those we agree with or those who agree with us. Here's number three. Walking in love is also more than loving the people who understand us or the people we understand. One of the people I say I love you to most often is my daughter, which I guess makes a certain amount of sense, but it's not just because she's related to me. It's because she really gets me. We make sense to each other, Michaela and I do, which is a blessing to both of us because there aren't that many of us. Neither one of us makes a whole lot of sense to anyone else. And those moments where I know that she understands me when nobody else was going to are the moments that I usually find myself saying, I love you so much. Because I'm not alone. But in those moments, again, I'm confusing love with gratitude. Love is when someone doesn't get you, can't grasp for the life of them what it is to be you, and goes out of their way to bless you anyway. That's my wife, who 35 years and counting, still looks at me and shakes her head and says, nope, still don't get it. And then goes right on working and laboring and sacrificing to do whatever is best for me, even though she does not always understand. But all of that said, let me change it around a little bit. Because all of that said, in a broad sense, Ann and I actually aren't that different. Yeah, up close, I'm a little deranged. And you need to pray for her. But if you zoom out, we're kind of the same. We're both white, we're both college educated, both grew up in the Midwest. Both grew up in semi-spiritual homes to middle-income parents. Both grew up with both parents. So in that respect, we're not that different. It's not surprising that we'd end up together because racially, culturally, spiritually, socioeconomically, we understand each other. On that level, we make sense to each other. Same background, a lot of the same experiences, same assumptions, same values, same priorities. How many of the people that I love, that I say I love you, that I tell that I love, and that I actually work hard to love, how many of them fall into that same category? How many of the people that I love are the people who look like me, who make sense to me, whose background I can relate to, whose lives I can understand? And you got to ask if that has something to do with the fact that Sunday morning is the most segregated time in our country. segregated in all of the ways that I just described, racially, culturally, socioeconomically. We tend to worship with people who remind us of us, because it's easier. Then we got to ask ourselves, how well did God understand us when Jesus decided to die for us? And I know that sounds weird, because in a sense, yeah, God understands everything perfectly all the time because omniscience. But in a sense, I wonder, I'll phrase it as a question. Sometimes I wonder if God understands us at all, because sin is fundamentally irrational. And sin, wickedness, is anathema to a good, perfect, holy, righteous God. Rebellion against a good and gracious God, that doesn't make sense to me, and I do it all the time. You want to walk in love? I remember reading something that Ray Ortlund said. Some seniors are reading Gentle and Lowly by Dane Ortlund, Ray's his dad and a marvelous pastor in his own right. And he wrote a piece, and he basically said, you want to walk in love? Pray that God would give you an opportunity to lay down your life for someone who doesn't look like you, for someone whose life doesn't necessarily make sense to you. You're going to die anyway. Why not pray that God would use the occasion of your death for racial, cultural, socioeconomic reconciliation? Why not use the occasion of your death to demonstrate love? Walking in love is not just for the people whose lives we understand. That was number three. Fourth time I noticed myself saying, I love you, was when I noticed somebody making life easy for me. They weren't doing anything for me per se. It's what they weren't doing. They weren't asking anything of me. They were being low maintenance. Oh, I love me some people who are low maintenance. You don't need help. You're not asking me to go out of my way for you. I don't have to pick up after you. You're not asking me to spend time or money on you. Man, I love you. I'll love you all day. Because why wouldn't I? Easy to love someone who doesn't require anything, doesn't demand anything, doesn't cost anything. Except if it doesn't cost anything, can we call it love? Because love costs. That's the definition of love. David said, I will not offer to the Lord that which costs me nothing. David knew that love that doesn't pay a price isn't love at all. And that cuts across all the ways that we love. Giving isn't giving if it's just digging in our pockets for spare change. Well, if I don't give it to the church, it's going to end up eaten by the dryer. So, you know, 50-50. Ministry isn't ministry if it's limited to the places and times of my choosing, doing the things that I like with people who I enjoy. Love that only loves when it's easy or convenient, it isn't love. Now, in this case, looking back, the other person was loving me because they went out of their way, they took time, they could have spent doing other things, and they inconvenienced themselves to take the burden off of me, to lighten my load. But when I said, I love you, I wasn't really. Okay, if I want to give myself the benefit of the doubt, when I said, I love you for being low maintenance, I suppose I might have meant, I'm willing to love you the same way that you just love me. I would do that if you asked me. I would do that if I saw an opportunity. But is that really true? I mean, am I? Do I with them? Because love is a choice, it's not an emotion. Love is a fact, it's not a feeling. Love shows up. Love puts up. Love pays up. Do I? With them, with him, in that relationship, do I ever? Or when I say I love you in that relationship, am I really saying I'm glad I don't have to love you? I'm glad you don't expect me to love you. I'm glad the words are enough. How do we remember the meaning of grace? What's the acronym we teach back in Children's Church? God's riches at Christ's what? Expense. What would we know of God's love if not for Christ's expense? What riches would we enjoy if it weren't for the price that Jesus paid on the cross, the sacrifice that he made? Because love. Walking in love is more than acknowledging the people who don't actually expect us to love. That's sort of paradoxical. Here's another one, number five. Walking in love is also more than valuing the relationships where we love people who love us. Where we love people in a way that's basically transactional. What do you mean by that, Patrick? Fifth time I remember saying I love you this week. I said I love you to someone who held up their end of the bargain. They did something for me, and it cost. They loved me, and I was appreciative because I did something for them first, and it cost. I said I love you because the transaction was complete. The quid was pro quo. We'd loved each other the way that John, Paul, George, and Ringo told us to. The love that we take is equal to the love that we make. We did that. We shook hands. And it was all good, except for the fact that it wasn't love. Love doesn't love in order to be loved. Love loves because that's what love does. That's what love is. I make that point at every single wedding that I do. And we'll talk about it here later in Ephesians 5 when Paul talks about marriage, where he takes this big idea and brings it to specific application in the context of marriage. When we stand before God and witnesses on our wedding day, we're not promising to love our partner as long as they love us. We're not promising to love them as well as they love us or in proportion to how they love us, because marriage isn't supposed to be that kind of thing. I think most of us realize that. That marriage isn't like hiring a plumber and where you're trading money for time. I'll pay you to fix my sink, but if my sink still leaks, I'm not paying you. If my sink stops leaking, well, then I will pay you. It's not a contingent contract like that. When I promised to love Anne, the promise wasn't contingent on Anne being lovely or lovable or her loving me back. I promised to love her because that was the ministry that God called me to. And when I promised to love her, I promised to love her the way that Jesus loves me, unconditionally. She makes it easy, but if she didn't, my responsibility would be the same. And here's the thing, hang on for the turn. That's not just marriage. That's the love we're supposed to have for everyone. The unconditional love that Jesus lavished upon us at the cross is the love we're to have for everyone. Again, Paul talks about marriage at the end of the chapter, but he's setting the idea up right here. He's reminding us that Jesus always loves us unconditionally, and he's exhorting us to love one another the same exact way. Jesus didn't die on the cross to get anything from us. He was already perfect. He was already complete. He was lacking for nothing. We sometimes talk about the cross as the great exchange, but what do we mean when we say that? We traded guilt for glory. That's not an equal trade. We traded being God's enemy for being his family. That's not an exchange of value for value. We traded bankruptcy for wealth. We traded prison for freedom. We traded emptiness for fullness. We traded less than nothing for everything. So walking in love can't be looking for that even trade. Can't be a giving in order to get. Has to be a giving in order to give. Love doesn't love because love needs. Love loves because that's what love does. Sixth one. Sixth time I noticed myself saying I love you this week, and quickly, because I want to make sure that we have time to not rush communion. Sixth time wasn't a conversation with someone, it was a conversation about someone. And not someone who's part of this fellowship, but somebody that my daughter and I both happen to know. And I was asking, have you talked to them lately? Have you heard how they're doing? And the answer was, oh, they're working hard. Overcoming adversity, making progress in a lot of areas of their life. And I said again, oh, that's great. That's so good to hear. I love them so much. By which I meant, I love that about him. I love that he's working hard and it's paying off. I love that good things are happening and because he deserves them. Because he's earned them. And my daughter's comment, and she wasn't going for profound, but she hit it anyway. My daughter's response was, yeah, it's easy to love someone like him. Someone who wants it and goes after it and does all of it the right way, like a good American. But I went away and asked myself, what about people who are harder to love? We fall into that sometimes, even if we don't want to admit it. I fall into it sometimes, looking at people and sizing them up, evaluating, do they deserve my love? Are they working hard, doing their share? Are they trying? I could almost always find grace for someone who's trying, even if they're making a haggis of it. I can almost always find grace for somebody who's going after it. I almost always have a hard time finding grace for someone who isn't, or who isn't in the way that I'm looking for. But where would I be? Where would any of us be if the prerequisite for God's love was that we were already trying really, really hard, that we were already getting a lot of things right? What if God turned off the tap of his love when we stopped trying? When we hit a season where we weren't working as hard, where we weren't doing our very best? One of my challenges as a pastor, I love teaching. Evangelism is harder for me because teaching, I can at least tell myself that people are meeting me halfway. They're showing up, they're leaning in, their pencils are out, they're willing to learn. The person walking down the street who isn't looking around, recognizing just from creation that God has to be real, not interested in knowing him, even though the heavens testify that he's real, they're not even trying. What's the point? Says my heart. But who among us was trying when God decided to love us? Who among us was working hard pursuing God when God softened our hearts and drew us, when he revealed himself to us, when he put someone in our life to tell us about him, to tell us how much he loves us? Walking in love is not just for the deserving. It's not just for the people that we judge to be working hard and doing their best. It's for people like us. People who were just the way that Jesus describes us, undeserving. The least, the last, and the lost. So half an hour later, what do we know? Where are we at? We know walking in love isn't just thanking those who help me, applauding those who agree with me. It's not just appreciating the people who get me. It's more than acknowledging those who make life easy for me. It's more than an equal exchange with people doing things for me. It's more than reaching out to people who are proving themselves to me. It has to be more than those things. Because what do those six things have in common? Me. And love isn't about me. Walking in love is about taking me out of the equation. Walking in love is living to serve others. Whether they look like me, relate to me, know me, whether they deserve it or appreciate it or are likely to reciprocate it, love is living to bless others sacrificially. It's living to love others the way that Jesus loved me. Love is about others. And Jesus tells us that every time he talks about love. Luke chapter 6, as we wrap up. Luke chapter 6, Jesus speaking, beginning in verse 32. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Luke 6:32. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you hope to receive back, what credit is that to you? For even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much back. But here's what we're called to do. Verse 35, Jesus says, love your enemies, do good, and lend hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great. And you will be sons of the Most High. Saying I love you is easy. I did it again and again this week. Loving people, not so much. Loving people is hard. And I was reminded of that again and again this week. I was reminded how easy it is to love the people who love us, bless us, serve us, do for us, and how much harder it is to love the people who are just people. Saying I love you is easy. Loving people is hard. Saying I love Jesus is easy. Read your Bible, pray every day, show up on Sundays and pretend to listen while you scroll your phone. Hey, look at me, loving Jesus. Saying I love Jesus is easy. Loving Jesus, loving like Jesus is hard. For all the reasons we've been talking about. Because at some point, loving Jesus has to stop being all about the getting. Getting fed, getting knowledge, getting counsel, getting support, getting friends, getting answers to prayer. All of that is great, and all of that is part of what it is to be a Christ follower, but at some point it has to also be about the giving. Serving, sacrificing, participating in the body of Christ, being a blessing, walking in love the way Jesus did, sacrificially. Paul's been talking to us for four chapters and counting about what it is to be the church. He's still doing it. Paul's still talking about what it is to be the church this morning. He's talking about how God took a group of people who did not deserve him, who fundamentally hated him, who could never repay him, and just decided to love him, and then sent them into the world, sent them out to people just like them, people who don't deserve love, people who might never repay love, people who might hate us for even trying to love. And Jesus says, yeah, none of that should matter because that's what love does. Love walks in love.